Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Mike McNamara with you. Just got off the phone with somebody. Hey, are you the post-traumatic winning guy? I felt like the My Pillow guy. Yes, that's me. Right? So, always cool conversation. Yeah, I've had a couple of them within the last 24 hours. Actually, three of them now that I think about it. So, I meet somebody who, I meet somebody who, have a conversation with somebody whose fiance committed suicide, Marine, and somebody I knew. And so just a great conversation yesterday. And then last night I, did a Zoom event with the, Marine Corps League detachment out of, I thought they were out of Tucson, but the guy running the meeting was out of Phoenix. Hold on. Scottsdale. So I was on last night, with them for about an hour. That was cool. First Marine Corps League detachment I've done that with. So hopefully I've motivated them. And then, just a few minutes ago, the business phone rang, and hello, hi, are you the My Pillow guy? Yes, I am. I am the My Pillow guy. So anyway, good morning to you on the 21st day of October. I want to talk about General Neary being relieved. And I get why he was relieved, okay? And so I'd just be curious what the investigation says that he said. What did he say? So here's a major general, right? Here's a major general that's going to go correct somebody because the music they're playing, right, evidently contains the N-word. So I'm not, you know, I don't think any of us are naive. When you when you use that word, even now when you're correcting somebody, you put yourself in a perilous position, right, relative to your career. And so then what happened? So again, now, so what were the circumstances? According to the Stars and Stripes report, and if you go to the All Marine Radio website and you click on the podcast page, you'll see yesterday's post about, you know, about General Neary. So let me quote from the article. The incident occurred in August on the parade deck, it says field, outside Marine Corps Forces Europe and Africa headquarters in Germany. A Lance Corporal who was present told Stars and Stripes that Neary used the N-word while Marines were doing physical training outdoors with loud music playing. Some of the rap music incorporated the word. So, all right, so from that report, General Neary's working, either coming and going out of the building or whatnot, and here's the music, probably heard the word. And he goes out to tell them to shut that off, right? And then the article goes on to say some of the music incorporated the N-word, which prompted Neary to ask the junior Marines how they would feel if he said it, right? So here's my question for you. And here's to me a question for General Berger about this. The Confederate battle flag has been banned from the workplace environment of Marines because it is so divisive. Don't you think that if we take that policy to its logical extension, there should be a whole series of those things then? That which divides us. That word is something that ought to be forbidden in the workplace. So should there be an amplification of that policy, right, that prohibits, you know, in the workplace of those things that, which divide us? And there's a list of them, right? Your calendar from, you know, Tools R Us that has women scantily clad. You can't put that up anymore. Why? Because it demeans women. It's divisive. I think that music that incorporates the N-word would fall under that same thing. Fall under that same policy. And so don't you think it's time we go there? Or are you going to look at me and say, no, it's their right. They have a right to play music that uses the N-word. Well, doesn't that endorse the use of that word? Doesn't that say that that's okay? And clearly it's not. And clearly it's not. So to me, there's a double standard when you get a general fired for something, but it's okay if Marines play music that contains that word. And all I'm saying is that there ought to be one standard. If it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable for everybody. It's unacceptable for you to play it, and it's unacceptable for me to use it when I correct you. And I'm okay with that. But that's not how the policy exists today. So what happens is you had Marines playing their music. This is a part of their music, and that's okay. And then a general comes out to correct them, uses the same word that they're listening to, and they're blaring all over the place, and they get his ass fired. Seems to me a bit of a double standard there. Okay, and all I'm saying is the commandant should clear that up. The commandant should say, in no way, shape, or form is that word tolerated in any circumstances in this United States Marine Corps, which is the same thing that he said about the Confederate, the Confederate battle flag. And the pushback on the Confederate battle flag is this: hey, I've got a right under the First Amendment to express myself, and when that to me is not a symbol of racism, it's a symbol of Southern pride and defiance and independence. So I don't see what you see in that flag. Okay? And the response to that was, yeah, go away with that shit. The pushback on you can't tell me what music to play is, hey, man, and this is what you hear from people in the black community. That's our word, right? There's a difference between the word N-I-G-G-E-R and the word N-I-G-G-A, okay? N-I-G-G-A belongs to us. N-I-G-G-E-R belongs to you. Now, you don't have to go very far to find that discussion, okay? And in my opinion, what the Commandant of the Marine Corps should say is the exact same thing and have the exact same amount of tolerance he had for any rationalization of hanging the stars and bars in any place that's a common place, the workplace. And that is this. It has no place in the Marine Corps. So General Neary, probably skewing to the poor judgment part of the world, using that word in the day and age that we live in, not something that you could do. I got it. Okay. At the same time, if that's the criteria for getting somebody relieved, that's fine. Then there should be no place for it in any organized Marine Corps event. I don't care if, you know, if it's music. Whoever's in charge of that music, they should be counseled. They should be disciplined. Does not, should not exist. So I have this to say about that. World Series last night. My cousin and his kid are going to deliver the Dodgers through their screwing with the cosmic energy a World Series, something that nobody's been able to do. My cousin, right, because they rooted for the Astros, they messed with the cosmic energy of sports. Yeah, they will have succeeded in doing that. Amazing. So Dodgers looked pretty good last night. Tampa's a good baseball team, though. I was surprised their pitching didn't show up last night. But anyway, we'll see. Seven games, long series. Muting mics for a debate. Like, why is that such a complicated event? You know, and to me, the president is, you know, he's his own jackass of a self, right? Just as Joe Biden is the same, just as Hillary Clinton is the same. But to me, you know, the debate is for the American people, right? And so, you know, there's going to be, you know, times where we cut mics off. In fact, if it was me running the debate, I would say, okay, here's, you're going to be separated, you know, and, you know, you're going to be on different cameras. You're not going to be in the same shot. So when we cut your camera and cut the mic, nobody even knows you're moving your lips, okay? Because this is not about you and you creating a scene and all the rest of it. This is about information for the American people. Okay? Now, so as I was thinking about that, I thought, who the hell are these debate commission people? What is this? So because I'm a inquisitive human being, I looked it up. Now let me see if I can find what I looked up. Where the hell is it? Here it is. All right. Commission on Presidential Debates. The Commission on Presidential Debates, or the CPD, is a nonprofit corporation established in 1987 under the joint sponsorship of the Democratic and the Republican political parties in the United States. The CPD sponsors and produces debates for U.S. presidential and vice presidential candidates and undertakes research and education activities relating to the debates. It has run all of the presidential debates held since 1988. The commission's debates are sponsored by private contributions from foundations and corporations, as well as fees from hosting events. The commission's exclusion of third-party candidates from debates has been the subject of much controversy and legal challenges. The first of these debates was in 1988. And that would have been what? Reagan versus who? I can't remember. In 1988, the League of Women Voters withdrew its sponsorship of the presidential debates after George H.W. Bush and Michael Dukakis' campaign secretly agreed to a memorandum of understanding that would decide which candidates would participate in the debates, which individuals would be panelists and be able to ask questions, and how tall the lecterns were. If I recall, Bush, you know, over 6 foot, Dukakis, not so much. Anyway, so the League of Women Voters, if you recall, if you're old enough to remember, they used to do that. All right. So, my question was, okay, but who's in charge of it? The commission is headed by Frank Fahrenkamp, a former Republican National Committee chairman, Dorothy Riddings, the president and chief executive of the Council on Foundations, and Kenneth Womack, former president of the National Democratic Institute. As of 2020, the board of directors consisted of John Danforth, right? Former elected official, attorney general of Missouri, United States senator from Missouri, and he served briefly as the United States ambassador to the UN. He is an ordained Episcopal priest. Charles Gibson, right, formerly of Good Morning America. John Griffin, don't know him. Yvonne Howe, don't know her. Jane Harman, former Democratic representative from California. She was the ranking member on the House Intelligence Committee and the Department of Homeland Security Committee. I'm just trying to think other people you know. Here's another minister. Here's the president of the University of Notre Dame is there. John Ignatius Jenkins. Antonia Hernandez. She's the president and CEO of a California Community Foundation. Newt Minow is an American attorney and former chair of the FCC. Richard Parsons, he's an American business executive, former chairman of Citigroup, and former CEO of Time Warner. Olympia Snow, right, United States Senator from Maine, formerly. Janet Brown, an American political executive and former government official serving as the executive director of the Commission on Presidential Debates. So she's a past chair of this organization. And so that's who makes up these rules. So anyway, I thought you might find that interesting. It's a bipartisan group that creates the rules for these things. And come with, you know, appropriate leadership credentials. Nobody on that list you would look at and say, yeah, that person is a partisan hack. So just thought you'd find that interesting. Next question. Why does the FBI have Hunter Biden's computer? How did they get involved in it? So this thing somehow or other lands in Rudy Giuliani's lap. So we were just talking about people with credibility, right? Rudy Giuliani used to have a ton of it, right? After September 11th, mayor of New York City, blah, blah, blah. Now kind of Donald Trump's, I don't know what you would call him. Is he Donald Trump's hatchet man? Whatever the hell he is. So anyway, it winds up with him. Well, what is the... What are the conditions under which the FBI gains possession of this? Hey, do us the favor as a political party, figure out if this is right. I don't understand. What's the national security issue that the FBI gets involved in that? And I don't recall when Hillary Clinton's email server became an issue. The FBI wasn't running to go grab that. So I just don't, I don't understand that this morning. That question, you know, popped into my head. And then one other thing I thought I'd share with you as I'm kind of going around the wheel of I don't want to, and that is, I was looking at serious mental illnesses. What is that? So I was looking at it, and so I thought I'd use this occasion to kind of do a little bit of education about mental illness. Mental illnesses are common in the United States. Nearly 1 in 5 U.S. adults live with a mental illness. Mental illnesses include many different conditions and vary in degree of severity, ranging from mild to moderate to severe. Two broad categories can be used to describe these conditions: AMI, which is any mental illness, and SMI, serious mental illness. AMI encompasses all recognized mental illnesses. I would be lumped into that category, right? SMI is a smaller and more severe subset of AMI. So any mental illness is defined as a mental, behavioral, or emotional disorder. AMI can vary in impact, ranging from no impairment to mild, moderate, or even severe impairment. Individuals with serious mental illnesses are defined below. Okay, so this is a serious mental illness. It's defined as a mental, behavioral, or emotional disorder resulting in serious functional impairment, which substantially interferes with or limits one or more major life activities. The burden of mental illnesses is particularly concentrated among those who experience disability due to SMI. So then, they have a whole series of things. I want to read to you a little bit about what it is to have a serious mental illness. And my point in reading this to you is, when I do this relative to post-traumatic winning, if you don't have a serious mental illness, you can understand and you can get through. Right? That, in my opinion, my experience, that which you're struggling with, especially relative to trauma. All right. So here's serious mental illness. In 2017, there was an estimated 11.2 million adults aged 18 or older in the United States with a serious mental illness. This number represents 4.5% of all U.S. adults. Now, kind of interesting statistics here. The prevalence of serious mental illness was higher among women, 6%, then men, 3%. And here's another interesting statistic, right? Young adults aged 18 to 25 had the highest prevalence of serious mental illness at 7.5, compared to adults, 5.6, and that's 26 to 49. And then adults age 50 and older, the incidence of serious mental illness in that age group is 2.7. So what does that tell you? That people have serious mental illnesses when they're younger, and then as they age, they learn how to deal with it, that number, you know, goes down. So kind of interesting. The prevalence of serious mental illness is highest among adults reporting two or more races, 8.1%. This is crazy, which is then followed by white adults at 5.2. The prevalence of SMI was lowest among Asian adults at 2.4%. So I throw that out to you. Because in my opinion, if you don't have a serious mental illness, you can understand the concepts and whatnot in post-traumatic learning. And so I get asked, like, well, I mean, who is this for? And my response is anybody who doesn't have a serious mental illness. I kind of refer to a serious mental illness as having infrastructure damage. And so before you go down a road where you would have to be able to understand and reason through and make decisions and whatnot, you probably have to be capable of being that, right? Of doing that, being full up round relative to that. And if you can't do that, then obviously, I mean, you can't do post-traumatic winning, right? That makes sense. So before you can go down that path, you've got to get that infrastructure, you know, you've got to get it repaired, dealt with, whatnot. So anyway, I thought I would share that with you this morning. Now, one other thing I'm going to share with you in about 30 minutes, about 32 minutes to be exact, is I'm going to share a speech with you. It is, I've listened to an excerpt of this speech. Okay. And actually, I'll play for you the excerpt of the speech because I happen to have the post-traumatic winning presentation open right now because I played something earlier, right? I played something earlier, which I love. I'll play it because I like it so much. This is the Al Pacino speech, right? This is just about 60 seconds right at the end.
I think you're talking to. I've been around, you know. There was a time I could see. And I have seen. Boys like these, younger than these, their arms torn out, their legs ripped off. But there is nothing like the sight of an amputated spirit. There is no prosthetic for that.
What if there was, though? What if I could teach you to build it? What if I could teach you to help them grow that leg back? Would you listen to me? Anyway, I love that. So there's another piece of video that happens that I use in post-traumatic winning. It's a guy by the name of Jim Collins, and he's speaking at the centennial of Peter Drucker's birth. Okay, now, who's Peter Drucker, Mac? Okay, Peter Drucker is an Austrian-born American, and he rose to fame with the books that he wrote about management, right? Management education. So anyway, he's often referred to as the founder of modern management. So Drucker dies in 2005. And he's, if you look him up, you'll find book after book after book after book. So this audio I'm going to play is Jim Collins speaking at the Drucker Centennial. So there's a Drucker School of Management at Claremont University, kind of a hoity-doity university here in private school, here in the Los Angeles area, I think out towards Riverside, truth be told. Who wants to live out there? Nobody. So it's too hot. It's too smoggy, Riverside. But it's in the foothills like that. So if you know where Pasadena is, if you head east, you go inland towards Riverside, you will stumble upon Claremont. Anyway, so this is the centennial celebration of Peter Drucker's birth. Okay, and I play this clip during post-traumatic winning. And I've been watching this clip now for a couple years.
I would like to give you a way of thinking that has been enormously helpful to me, that came from the Good to Great research for dealing with great difficulty. And it was what we came to call the Stockdale Paradox. And the Stockdale Paradox was taught to us by, when we were doing the Good to Great research, we're trying to make sense of the CEOs. And in doing that, I just by chance happened to get to know Admiral Jim Stockdale, who was the highest ranking military officer in the Hanoi Hilton, shot down in 1967, was there till 1974. They could pull him out at any time and torture him, and they did. He tortured over 20 times.
Okay, now, let me just tell you about Collins. He wrote the book Good to Great, and what they were studying was, what did organizations, what did businesses who went from good to great have in common? Okay, which takes him to Stockdale.
And I had the privilege to get to know Admiral Stockdale. And we were going to the faculty club one day, and I had read his book In Love and War, which was written in alternating chapters by himself and his wife about their years when he was in the camp. And I got depressed reading the book because it seemed so bleak. It seemed so difficult. It seemed, you know, it's like we can all endure anything if we know it's going to come to an end and we know when. But what if you don't know if it's ever going to come to an end? And you certainly don't know when. So I asked Admiral Stockdale how he dealt with that. And he said, you have to realize I never got depressed because I never, ever wavered in my faith that not only I would get out, but I would turn being in the camp into the defining event of my life that in retrospect I would not trade. Later, when we were up the hill, I asked him, I said, Admiral Stockdale, who didn't make it out as strong as you? And he said, easy, it was the optimists. I said, the optimists? You sounded optimistic. He said, no, I was not optimistic. I never wavered in my faith that I would prevail in the end, but I was not optimistic. I said, what's the difference? Well, the optimists always thought we'd be out by Christmas. Of course, Christmas would come and it would go. And then we were going to be out by Easter and Thanksgiving, and then Christmas would come again, and they died of a broken heart. And that's when Admiral Stockdale grabbed me by the shoulders and said, this is what I learned. When you're facing, you're imprisoned by great calamity, by great difficulty, by great uncertainty, you have to, on the one hand, never confuse the need for unwavering faith that you will find a way to prevail in the end, with, on the other hand, the discipline to confront the most brutal facts we actually face. And we're not getting out of here by Christmas.
So I play that, right? And I watch it all the time. And it's evolved. My understanding of it has evolved. I would have told you when I first started doing this, you know, and in the context of the presentation, it's in a section where I talk about the truth, how important the truth is, confronting the truth. And here's Stockdale saying, you have to confront the truth, and that's what we're going to do today. But as I've done this more, the first part of the quote now, never waver in your faith that you will prevail. Well, when you're in the darkness relative to trauma, where does that hope come from? And I mentioned the Sergeant Major, former Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, Sergeant Major Kent, put out a video, you know, telling people it's okay to go to mental health. When I saw it, I was like, my brain was screaming, you don't get it, Sergeant Major. They've gone. They're not getting the help that they need. And they've gone away from it. They're alone groping. But it's not like they're not going. Most people do at some point. And if it doesn't meet their expectations, they don't go back. So anyway, what gives you hope in that world? And so to me, that's what I believe now post-traumatic winning does. One of the primary things it does is it gives people hope. Holy shit, there is a path. Holy shit, these morons have walked down it. Holy shit, McNamara is nothing special. If he could do it, I could do it. Right, 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 right. All of that right. But ultimately, what is the end state? You've reignited this light of hope in somebody that, yeah, I can not only live a good life, but I can live a great life. So it's very fitting. Good. How do you get from good to great? Right? How do you get to good from good to great? Now, and so I, in the work I was doing on the script, I thought, this past week, I thought, you know what? I've never seen the whole thing that Collins does. I should probably take a look at that. So I did. So you're going to hear it today. And I'm going to tell you this. If you just had the thought like, McNamara's going to play something else, rewind that thought. Now delete it. All right? Now delete it. And what I want you to just know this. I promise you, you'll get something out of it. I promise you. I did. He's a great speaker, and he's funny at parts, but it is, and it's about, I don't know, 56 minutes long, but I will tell you, you will absolutely positively enjoy it. So don't write it off as whatever. And if you can't stay for the second hour of All Marine Radio this morning, come back later and you've got to listen to this because you will walk away with something. I promise you. So you're going to hear that. So there you have it. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this Wednesday official. And then tomorrow we will discuss, we'll probably discuss General Neary's relief. We're going to discuss this hour, Jim Collins talking about, Peter Drucker and the way he impacted his life, because I sent that to all the boys. And we'll also talk about the article that you heard about yesterday, which is the fantasy of MCDP1. What did they think of the article? What did they think of the interview? So with all that said, notice how I tied everything together. That's like professional shit right there. Anyway, United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Good morning. And this is dedicated to a person I spoke with yesterday. You know, sometimes life can be really difficult, you know. And I have these experiences where I connect with people that have somehow or other been pointed in my direction. And the conversations are absolutely incredible. And they are just as profound on me as they are with anybody who I speak to. So I had a few of them yesterday, but this is dedicated to somebody who I spoke to yesterday. And life difficult. But no, but I, in my opinion, headed in the right direction and going to do great things. And hopefully we'll do something in some form of collaboration. So excited about that. But anyway, dedicated to that person.
Our flag comes through to every region. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Time for us to check the weather around Maryland. Foggy in 67 in Northern Virginia, where Marine Corps Base Quantico is. Partly sunny, 79 down the coast at Camp Lejeune, so it's warmed up out there. 29 Palms, sunny and 70, cool. Out in the desert, Camp Pendleton, foggy in 64. Camp Smith, dark cloudy and 74. In Hawaii, raining, dark, and 78 in Okinawa. Down under in Darwin, it is dark, cloudy, and 80. And in Oslo, which is in Norway. There's also an Oslo, Minnesota, in case you don't know. Yeah. Warren, Alvarado, and Oslo. That's a co-op of communities that have one high school. Actually, it's a K-12 school. Yeah, I went and spoke there. They have a great football. They have a great football team. They play 8-man football, and it gets cold, right? So there's a set of bleachers, but most people come in their pickup trucks, and they kind of ring. They ring the field in their pickup trucks, and when they score a touchdown, right, they honk their horns and they flash their lights. It's a kick in the ass. No, small town, America. It's awesome. Anyway. Currently in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, cloudy and 67 degrees. We are looking for a high today of 73. 72 tomorrow, 74 on Friday, 71 on Saturday, 68 the high on Sunday. Holy shit. That is a look at your weather. When we'll take a break, we'll come back. And when we come back, we'll check some news headlines. And again, you have to listen to Jim Collins. It's a great speech with some really some things that you can do in your life, and you can start them today. That I promise you will make your life better. One in particular that I took on board. So don't touch that dial. More of Auburn Radio coming on next.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back, and that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform. So stand by us now.
Like my brother did, when he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did, when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did, when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis, or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. They are diverse, unique, from all corners of the country. And thanks to their common experience, a family for life. But whether they served in lands far away or communities close to home, some of these men and women may face difficult times or even crisis. But sometimes reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all for veterans, service members, reserve, and National Guard. Thankfully, friends, family, and communities are standing by their service members and veterans now more than ever. We're all in this together. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. During times of crisis, reach out and call. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. Everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. Please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
We all share a common journey. We wanted to serve our country, stand for something bigger than ourselves, and protect the things we love. Although we were ready to face any mission, help those in need, and make a difference, for some of us, coming home was more of a challenge than we expected. In the service, we had each other's backs. But as veterans, it can sometimes feel like we're all alone, even when surrounded by our loved ones.
If you're a veteran or service member in crisis, or know one who is, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
News. Stars and Stripes. Fraud, waste, and abuse cost the U.S. $19 billion in one decade in Afghanistan. The waste attributed to failed counter-narcotics and stabilizations program, the Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction said in a report published on Tuesday. This is... You know, this is I mentioned this yesterday. Despite its 10-day assault in the Helmand province of Afghanistan, the Taliban accused the U.S. of violating the February Accord. you know, you think Afghans ought to be concerned about this shit, right? Do you understand why we're cautiously pessimistic, right? I think we've migrated from cautiously pessimistic to, right, straight up pessimistic about the future of Afghanistan. That in the news on in Stars and Stripes. Another interesting story. 10 NATO members now meet the 2% defense spending mark. But my favorite, Germany, not them. How about that? Germany. Germany, which has been accused by President Donald Trump of not spending enough on defense. I mean, Germany's a joke. Spends one, the most powerful economy in Europe, spends 1.57% of GDP on its military. Clown show. Clown show. UN Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg told reporters, we expect this trend to continue. Let's see. In 2014, when allies agreed that all members should meet NATO's 2% spending level by 2024, only the U.S., Greece, the United Kingdom were in compliance. Now, Romania, Estonia, Latvia, Poland, Lithuania, France, and Norway are meeting that target. How about that? Yeah. So, I mean, but you won't see Donald Trump getting credit for that. And again, I don't care if Joe Biden did it, that person, or Barack Obama, that person, or George Bush, that person ought to get credit for it, but ain't happening, because that ain't the narrative, and that's where we are today. It's about narratives. It's not about truth, okay? Good or bad, it's about your narrative. Can you sell your narrative? The University of Pittsburgh will study gender integration at Marine Corps boot camp. The University of Pittsburgh is conducting a study to determine the best way for the Marine Corps to approach gender integration at its two boot camps, the service announced yesterday. The study comes as the Marine Corps faces a looming deadline set in the fiscal 2020 National Defense Authorization Act that mandates that the service end gender-segregated recruit training within 5 years. And so recruits will be integrated as they go through recruit training at both San Diego and Parris Island. Or what's been mused about is a new facility that would be, because trying to overhaul the other ones to make whatever modifications would be so expensive, which is hard for me to believe. You're going to go buy and develop an entirely new campus? Maybe. Show me how it works. The study is a $2 million contract between the Marine Corps and the university's Neuromuscular Research Laboratory and Warrior Human Performance Research Center, where a guy by the name of Bradley Nindel works. He's a professor and vice chairman for research in the school's Department of Sports Medicine and Nutrition. So, maybe we'll see if we can get him on the program. Yeah. So, that is in the news. Another article about General Neary. It might be the same one from yesterday. Let me check and see if it is. Published yesterday. It is. And so really, when it's interesting that Marines reached out to Stars and Stripes to make sure that this got reported and covered. And that's why that's my point in the whole story is this. Right? There's two pieces to that story. One is a situation in which, given today's climate for race and bias, that you have people that are playing music loud enough for everybody to hear that contains that word. and people think that's okay. That's got to be corrected. And then General Neary, for his foolishness, right, in correcting that situation to use that word, he got to be smarter than that. So, again, but my point is this. The banning of the Confederate battle colors in places of work by the Commandant of the Marine Corps says we will not tolerate this. He needs to extend that. That word shouldn't be heard while people are doing PT or anything else. Whoever thought that music was appropriate, that person ought to be disciplined as well. Because the message is this, we don't tolerate it. I'm okay with that. But that's got to apply to everybody. Army chaplain jailed for drunken behavior. Yeah. In Stuttgart, Germany. Going to a general court-martial. He goes to one of those shopettes. He steals gas. What? A big welcome home and job well done to Marines and sailors from 1st MLG. Who returned back to Camp Pendleton? After being up in the California mountains, about 250 Marines and sailors have been up there. They're with 7th Engineer Support Battalion, who I'm going to go talk to here in a couple weeks. Yeah. Helped suppress the Creek Fire in Central California. Their mission began on April 21st. So nice going. Nice going. And best of all, no reported injuries. So whatever bumps and bruises people got were, I guess, within tolerance of the mission. Purdue Pharma reaches an $8.34 billion settlement. $8.34 billion. You heard that right. Settlement. The settlement helps clear the way for the bankrupt OxyContin maker to turn over future profits to cities and states that accuse it of fueling the opioid crisis. $8.3 billion. How amazing is that? Wow. How does that happen? What happens to the doctors that overprescribe that shit? They get off scot-free? Interesting stats. Headline for the story in the this is a Wall Street Journal headline. Here's the second one. The businesses where Google is biggest and where it isn't. And there's some interesting little graphics. Google's share of worldwide search traffic. Worldwide search traffic, 92%. How amazing is that? Getting vectored to the places that Google wants you to go and away from the places they don't want you to go. It's a lot of power, huh? 92% of the worldwide search engine. Google Chrome share of all browser usage, 66%. I stopped using Chrome a few months ago. Yeah, just so you know. I use now Microsoft Edge, I believe it's called. I do believe that it's faster. Yeah. Google starts everything in the world. And to me, and I have a fast computer, clunky. And so, I mean, open up Device Manager and look at how much, you know, computing power that Google uses on your computer. Yeah. So anyway, if you don't have anything else to do, Google Cloud share of the cloud market is 6%. So anyway, interesting article about Google. I think the day is coming that big tech has to be broken up. Too much. I mean, the thing that with Twitter this past week and their ability to censor and maybe just below the censor line, their ability to direct traffic, in my opinion, too much power in the hands of too few people. So anyway, one other story I wanted to comment on that I saw was there's a whole series of stories starting last week about Dianne Feinstein being removed from her chairmanship of the Senate. She's not the chair. She's the minority ranking member on the Senate Judiciary Committee. She is being absolutely drugged through the street because she thanked Lindsey Graham for the way that he ran the hearing and then gives him a hug at the end of the hearing. People are incensed. Now, I had a senator on years ago. I know him from North Dakota, Senator Byron Dorgan, not a senator anymore. He said, you know, Mac, the lubricant of democracy is compromise. But you can't compromise anymore. Now, not only can you not compromise, you can't even be publicly cordial and complimentary of somebody anymore. And, you know, again, where does this all end? Where does this take us? And I will say this to the two parties. Your inability to be respectful of each other and to compromise empowers people like AOC and people out there on the fringe for you to get what you need done because you can't cross the aisle and work with anybody else on the other side. You have to pander to the most radical elements of your party, people that had been historically ignored because the bell curve runs Washington, D.C. And under that long axis used to be people from both parties. As you've turned your back on each other and compromise, you've empowered the crazies on the left and the right. And there you have it. And the Democratic Party going through that right now. And if Joe Biden wins, wait till we see that shit show. Yeah, I can hardly wait. Anyway, let's see. USNI News. Hard news. Russian Navy. Here's kind of an interesting little story. The Russian Navy is seen escorting Iranian tankers bound for Syria. Now, last time this was done, they were intercepted. Yeah. Interesting. Another story. Despite military improvements, a Chinese invasion of Taiwan still highly risky, says a former Pentagon official. Who said this? Speaking at a Atlantic Council online forum, Randall Schreiber, now chairman of Project 2049, compared the island to the Fall de Gap, a pivotal point in the defense of Western Europe during the Cold War. While the PLA, that's the Chinese military, is getting better at amphibious warfare, moving tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of troops across 80 nautical miles of water and then successfully fighting an active resistance in mountainous terrain is not likely. China prefers to win without fighting. Yeah, so they will rattle their sabers, my opinion. They will rattle their sabers, but amphibious warfare, nobody does it like the United States. So, and again, the biggest story coming out of USNI News was yesterday that Australia will join Japan, the United States, and India for upcoming naval exercise. So that's good. That's what needs to happen. Top story in Marine Corps Times. They didn't have one yesterday, but they have a story about General Neary today. Next story. Marine Corps says goodbye to the Super Cobra. Yeah, Super Cobra. What is the definition? With its initial flight over the New Orleans skyline, with its final flight over the New Orleans skyline, the Marine Corps said goodbye to the historic AH-1 Whiskey Super Cobra after 34 years of service. Delivered in 1986, Marine Corps operated the Whiskey model since the late 90s. So, yeah, did a lot of good work in Iraq and Afghanistan. Kind of an interesting story. There's been this push to get veterans in Congress. And even though more veterans are running, the numbers on Capitol Hill may still drop. How about that? Twice as many women veterans are running for Congress this year than in 2018. But overall, the number of veterans serving in the House and Senate is likely to drop again this election cycle. So far this year, 163 veterans have won primaries for House seats and 18 more for Senate seats. The 181 veterans potentially up for election to Congress is an increase of about 5% from 2 years ago. But officials from the Veterans Campaign, a nonpartisan organization which trains veterans to run for office and work in political strategy fields, said even with the boost in candidates, the number of veterans actually elected to office is unlikely to grow significantly in 2021, if at all. So that's not good news. We need more veterans. All right. Yesterday, the Marine Corps released a radically revised reading list. Anyway, I don't have time to go into that. Top five stories in Early Bird, and then you're going to hear Jim Collins. Number one story in Early Bird today is Marine Corps Forces Europe and Africa commander fired. Number two, Super Hornet crashes in Central California. A Navy F-18E Super Hornet crashed Tuesday morning in Central California, more than likely out of the Lemoore Air Force Base. I'm sorry, Naval Station. Actually, the mishap happened during a routine training flight just south of Naval Air Weapons Station China Lake. The pilot ejected was taken to a local hospital for examination. The crash is under investigation. Not too many details. So that happened yesterday. I was initially told that it was an F-16. Number three, Russia ready to freeze nuclear warheads in exchange for a New START extension. I told you, economically, Russia needs this, right? They can't swim in that end of the pool. Number four, Vanessa Guillen's family will receive military death benefits after a new army ruling. What happened in this incident, right? Specialist Vanessa Guillen's death, allegedly at the hands of another soldier, occurred in the line of duty, a designation that gives her next of kin access to benefits and services. Officials at Fort Hood, Texas, Tuesday announced that they had determined that Guillen's death occurred as a result of her military duties, and they have informed her family as a result. So anyway, yeah, Fort Hood, Texas. Not too much good coming out of Fort Hood here lately. Number five, senators urge the Pentagon to suspend implementation of the Army's new fitness test. The Army has put a ton of work into their fitness test. Democratic senators appealed Tuesday for support of a legislative proposal that would suspend the implementation of the Army's new physical fitness test, arguing that the high-profile initiative to improve physical fitness is based on faulty data and could undermine the goal of creating a diverse force. What does that mean? It means not everybody could do it. Senators Kirsten Gillibrand and Richard Blumenthal, former Marine, called the rollout of the Army Combat Fitness Test premature, said the exam could damage some soldiers' professional prospects. Quote, "We have considerable concern regarding the negative impact the test may already be having on so many careers," they said in a letter. "It is imperative that we pause implementation until all questions and concerns are answered." The test has become a charged issue within the Army as it pits the service's effort to establish gender-blind standards and improve soldier readiness against fears it could pose an additional challenge to retaining skilled troops and compound obstacles for underrepresented populations within the force. What does that mean? Critics say it could have a disproportionate impact on women, who make up 15% of the Army but occupy few leadership positions. So here's the conundrum that we all face, right? You want this blind standard, right? And we begin to implement it, and we go to one standard, and that means, right, the guys are going to have it easier for the most part. Okay? It's going to be a lower standard for men. It's going to be probably a higher standard for women. If you want to go to one standard, that's probably the way it's going to be. Army data shows that 18 months after a small cohort of soldiers started taking the test on a provisional basis, women continue to fail at a dramatically higher rate than men. In the second quarter of 2020, 54% of women failed the test, compared with 7% of men. Single standard, man. It's what you wanted. There you go. How do we have a single standard that allows women to achieve at a high rate without absolutely, you know, turning men into fat asses? I don't know. But again, this doesn't fit the narrative. Anybody can do it. Anybody could do it. The stark gender gap comes as Pentagon leaders express an urgent desire to rectify the military's legacy of racial and gender inequality issues that have long dogged the force, but were given new prominence when race-related unrest gripped the nation this summer. So that's the narrative. The physical fitness test, the genderless physical fitness test, right? Which is giving us the numbers that we don't want, which runs counter to the narrative, has to be eliminated. Comedy, right? Again, the most important thing is the narrative, and everything gets formed around the narrative. So we'll take a quick break. Jim Collins coming up next. Whatever you do, don't touch your dial. Don't touch your mouse, right? Don't touch your keyboard. Listen to Jim Collins. It's an awesome, awesome speech. He's talking about the impact of Peter Drucker, his writings on management. And I'll just give you one little nugget that you're going to hear. He says develop your own board of directors for your life. Do that. That's one of the reasons why you listen to it. The other thing he points out, I want to say at the age of 68, Drucker had written a third of what he would ultimately write. It might have been 65. So, you know, he makes the point is, look, as you age through life, more should be expected out of you, not less. I mean, come on, you have all this experience. You've done all this stuff. And if you follow Drucker's example, of all that he would do, he had only published a third of what he would publish by the time, and he wrote a lot, by the time he was 65. He was at the 33% mark. So, again, don't touch that dial. More of this incredible program. That's right. You heard me say that. Coming up next, right here on your home for All Marine Radio, the All Warrior Radio Network.